Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Okay, beginning with text 38.
Nakarhi chin matparat shantarupe nanshyanti nome nimisho ledi hetihi yesham aham priya atma sutascha sakha guruk surido daivam ishtam.
Third level of realization of Vedanta education is prayojana, understanding of the actual goal of life, the actual perfection that is aimed at. The ultimate perfection is not liberation. Liberation is an intermediate step on the way toward the perfection of love of God. Both of them are described in this verse. The Lord continued, "My dear mother, devotees who receive such transcendental opulences are never bereft of them, neither weapons nor the change of time can destroy such opulences. Because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity, they cannot be degraded in their possessions at any time." This is a description of the transcendental position of a Vaishnava. This is life in the spiritual realm. And it's completely contrary to the life that we know in this material world. Those who have dedicated their lives to me, they are never destroyed. The ultimate weapon of the Supreme Lord, time, never cuts them down. In other words, they don't die. To fight enemies, you need weapons, the Pandavas, in order to assure a good possibility of victory over all the great warriors who are allied with Duryodhana. So the need to get some special weapons. Vyasadeva came all the way down from his ashram to tell that to Yudhishthira. Vyasadeva generally stayed in his ashram. He didn't interfere with politics. He was a Pugha Brahman, not the kind of Brahman who gets involved in politics. Some Brahmanas are associated with the government. That's required. They're advisors to the government. Other Brahmins stay away from politics. Someone has to do that also. Someone has to maintain complete autonomy by not getting involved with politicians. Vyasadeva was in that category. He stayed in solitude with a few disciples up in the Himalayas. But he came down a few times to Hastinapura to meet with his nephews, the Pandavas, especially to advise Yudhishthira, the elder brother. And he told Yudhishthira on this occasion that you're not going to be able to defeat Duryodhana and all his allies unless you get the weapons of the demigods, celestial, swargiya weapons. So you go up to the top of Gandhamadana mountain, I think it was, and there you'll find the pathway to heaven. Arjuna can go because he's the son of Indra. He'll be welcomed there. And he can bring you back He will get the blessings of Indra and the other demigods, and they will give him their weapons. Then you will be able to defeat your enemies. Without those weapons, it'll be very difficult. So generally, you need appropriate weapon to destroy your enemies. The Supreme Lord doesn't need any other weapon than time. That's his ultimate weapon. He has his Sudarshan Chakra, but that is manifesting his time energy. Krishna doesn't have to lift a hand even, or to speak of wield a weapon. He doesn't have to lift his finger to destroy his enemies. It's all arranged by time. No one, no demon or demigod lives forever. So time destroys anyone who opposes the Lord. But those whose lives are dedicated to the Supreme Lord, they're not cut down by the weapon of time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, or wrote actually, the motto at the memorial, the samadhi of Haridas Thakur in Puri. He wrote in English. He reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. A Vaishnav dies to live, and living tries to spread the holy life around. This was written originally in English by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die. Of course, the body dies. But that, for the Vaishnav, means eternal life. Narad Muni, in his last material body, as the son of a Shudrani, he had to die, but he describes how his death occurred. The time of my, the finishing of my prarabdha karma came. Prarabdha karma nirvano nyapachat pancha bautaka, and my body made of the five elements died, fell down. But I had no remaining material, no remaining karma. So immediately, prayujyamani maitam, shudham bhagavatim tanum. At the very moment that he gave up his material body, he assumed his spiritual body. The body that we know him in, the eternal body of Narada. So that's the death of a devotee. It's his entrance into eternal life. It's not death like anyone else's death. The devotees who dedicate their lives to Krishna, and they have their personal relationships with Krishna. And these relationships are in different modes. Friendship, servitude, parental affection, conjugal affection. Yesham aham. Priya atma sutascha sakha guru surido daivam ishtam. Krishna is, in the very beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami calls Krishna Akila Rasamrita Murti. He's the embodiment of all the different rasas. It's not that Krishna is only interested in the gopis. He's interested in having a variety of relationships with many different kinds of devotees. And therefore he reciprocates accordingly. He satisfies his devotees, and he is satisfied by all his devotees. Not only the best ones, not only the ones in what's technically the highest rasa. Anyone who dedicates his life unconditionally to Krishna's pleasure is accepted by him as a devotee, no matter what variety of relationship he has with the Lord, even neutrality. Certainly his those who are in servitude attitude are very dear to the Lord. So everyone in Vaikuntha is living on this platform of eternality and of being in intimate connection in some capacity with the personality of Godhead. I'll move on to the next verse. Hare Krishna. Imam lokam tataiv amum atmanam ubayahinam atmanam anuyecheha yedayak pashavo griha visvidya sarvan anyamscha mam evam vishvato mukam bhajan jananyaya bhaktiya tan with your atipadaye. Thus the devotee who worships me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. This is a very poetic language. Tam mityorati paraye. I transport them to the other side of the river, the ocean of birth and death. And here's the measuring stick to see how far we are, how close we are to this perfection. The devotees are just who are ready for being delivered by Krishna beyond birth and death. Their qualification is that they've renounced all material attachments, every single kind of material attachment. There's nothing holding them back. There's nothing tying them down anymore. Therefore, Krishna can take them. We will not be able, any one of us, to go back to Godhead as long as we're harboring any material attachments or desires. Sooner or later, we have to give them all up. We can take our time, or if we're eager and anxious, we can try to speed it up. But every single one of our material attachments has to be given up to attain the ultimate perfection. It's recommended to do it by stages. Especially if a person artificially makes a show of renunciation, someone abandons his family, say, prematurely, and without proper spiritual preparation, it will just be a fiasco. And so much trouble will be caused. The family will suffer, and he won't succeed. He'll end up falling back into material attachment in a different form. So it must be done very carefully and appropriately. Premature renunciation will not succeed. One has to prepare properly and give up each attachment in the proper way, under good spiritual guidance. But that's our aim. We shouldn't think that we can remain in this world in the same position forever. Everything we have to be prepared to give up. Especially, we don't know when Krishna is going to take it away from us, whether we're willing or not. We don't know when we have to die. We don't know when our loved ones will die. We don't know when we'll face financial ruin or whatever, or bad health. We never know. It's out of our control anyway. So the qualification is, of course, not only renunciation. The impersonalists also renounce everything. But what's missing is this bhajant ananyaya bhaktiya. The devotees give up everything only so that they can worship Krishna exclusively. If you renounce for another purpose, it's not transcendental. If you renounce for liberation, that may be in the mode of goodness, but it's not spiritual. It's a selfish purpose. If you give everything up for your own perfection. If you give everything up for political reasons, Prabhupada says, that's demoniac. You accept great austerities and become very renounced only because you wanted to defeat some enemies or gain some power. That is demoniac austerity. So the transcendental path, the proper devotional activity is to exercise appropriate renunciation. Papanchakataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha mumukshubi parityago vairagyam palgukatyate. This is the statement of Rupa Goswami that the impersonalists tend to not understand properly the principle of renunciation. They, thinking that everything in this world, everything that has form, everything that is has any duality to it, any distinctions, any qualities, must be false. And they take things that are meant for the use of Krishna's service, the paraphernalia of Krishna's service. That doesn't just mean, you know, the chamara in the temple and the giwiks. A person's family is also meant to be used in Krishna's service. His wealth, his talents, everything a person has is the paraphernalia of Krishna's service. And if you throw these things away inappropriately, refusing to use them for Krishna's service, that is palgu vairagya. Insignificant, inappropriate renunciation. Mumukshubi, because you want liberation, you do this. It's selfish and it's illogical, irrational. So the appropriate form of renunciation is also described in the following verse. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjitaha yunjataha nirbandam krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchyate. Rather, the Vaishnavas should accept the things of this world, which are all objects created for sense gratification. Nothing in this world is created unless someone wants to enjoy it materially. Just like the construction company, contractors, they don't build unless someone commissions them to build and pays for the materials and for the work. If I commission a house, then the builders will build it. But they won't build the house until someone wants one, wants to pay for it. Like that, the material energy doesn't produce material bodies unless someone wants to have that body. Material energy doesn't produce objects of sense gratification unless someone wants to enjoy them. Unless and until. So everything in this world is meant for somebody's material enjoyment. Still, as Vaishnavas, we have to take the risk of using these things for Krishna's service, because they're also, they have a dual nature. Everything in a higher sense is meant to be used to please Krishna for his service. So we have to take these dangerous objects of sense gratification. Anasaktasya. And somehow avoid becoming addicted to them. Avoid thinking that they're meant for our pleasure. Get the idea in our head that they're really meant for Krishna's pleasure. Then your wife, your children, your money will not destroy you, will not drag you down. Then they become spiritualized. Yatarham, use them as is appropriate for Krishna's pleasure. That's actually yuktam vairagyam. Appropriate, practical renunciation. Not to give everything up necessarily, but to use everything for Krishna's service. Nirbandat Krishna sambandhe. This is how to become detached by attaching everything to Krishna. Okay, so I'll read the next verse.
Nanyatra mad bhagavata pradana purusheshwarat atmanat sarva bhutanam
Vayam tivram nivartate.
The terrible fear of birth and death can never be forsaken by anyone who resorts to any shelter other than myself, for I am the Almighty Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original source of all creation, and also the Supreme Soul of all souls.
Terrible fear. This is, as we were discussing the other day, this is the common experience of everybody in material life. It's our basic emotion, is fear. We try to ignore it. We try to cover it with joy, with other feelings, and not pay attention to it, but it's always there in the background. Bayam dvitiya biniveshya taksyat. If you're intentionally trying to separate your life from the service of Krishna, you inevitably are immersed into the ocean of fear. So there's no way to get free from this fearful condition of living in the material world other than taking shelter of Krishna. Nanyatra mad bhagavataha. There's nobody other than me, Kapila Dev is rightfully claiming, who can deliver you from fear. Because he's the soul of all created beings. He's the soul of all souls. The word soul has scientific significance. It's not just a vague religious word that doesn't mean anything. Every living body has a conscious being who has a special relationship with it. Inert objects don't have souls. A computer is not alive, is not conscious, no matter what they say about artificial intelligence. It doesn't have a soul. It may have a processor, but it doesn't have a soul. And what the soul does, it's the proprietor of the body. It controls it. It gives it consciousness. It experiences pain and pleasure and is aware of things through the body. This is the special relationship between soul and body. It's an owner, a relationship between owner and the object owned. But the owner is a person and the body is impersonal or not living. Or we can raise it up to a higher level. Even the living beings can be considered the body of God. Or more properly, everything that exists, all varieties of energy. The spiritual energy, which is alive, including the marginal energy of the living entities, and the inferior material energy, which is not alive, not conscious, all of that together comprises the body of God. He's the supreme soul. And we are the, in a sense, parts of his body. So, Atmanak Sarvabhutanam, because of that intrinsic relationship, not just of supremacy, but that intimate relationship that a body has with its soul, there's nobody else. Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Shri Gordon. No one else other than that Supreme Soul who can deliver us from the fear which has as its basis our artificial attempt to be separate from Him. Yeah, I'll read the next verse.
Madbayad vati vato yam suryastapati madbayad Varshatindro dahatyagnir mrityus charati madbayat.
Out of fear. Oh, that's not how it starts.
Translation. It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows
out of fear of me. The sun shines out of fear of me. And the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me. Fire burns out of fear of me, and death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. So this is, again, a very poetic verse. And it's actually echoing statement in the Vedas, in the Upanishads. I think it's Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Or Kata Upanishad, I don't know. Bishasmad vatat pavate bishodeti suryaha bishasmad agnischandrascha mrityur davadipanchamaha. Very similar verse. But from the eternal Shruti, the Upanishads. By fear of the Supreme Lord, the wind god and the sun god are acting. Agni, Indra, are also acting under his direction. And the fifth of them, number five, death, is also running out of fear of the Supreme Lord. The demigods are also conditioned souls. So they're also subject to this fear. But they're pious people. We talk about God-fearing persons. Righteous persons. Christians especially talk about fearing God. So that is the beginning of devotion. When you serve God out of fear of being punished, fear of going to hell, fear, even neophyte devotees are always afraid of committing aparads, even Vaishnavs. But there's higher moods of service. Krishna, it's not an intimate relationship when you're afraid of Krishna. You can't deal with him in a very close way if you're so afraid of him. No. With the attitude of fear, the Jews and Christians have the idea that nobody can know the name of God. If any man sees the face of God, he will be struck down dead immediately. No, that's their idea. They're afraid of God. They're terrified to see his face or hear his name. You cannot have very intimate devotion with that kind of fearful attitude. Just like, you know, you can't have a very close relationship with anybody if you're too much afraid of him. You can worship him, you can serve him, but you can't get too close. So, Krishna arranges that his devotees are advised to try to learn how to love him. The intermediate stage is to practice sadhana bhakti. The devotees who are practicing that sadhana bhakti, they transcend the lower level of just submitting to God out of terror, fear. Their primary feeling is one of gratitude and responsibility. My spiritual master saved me from all these reasons to be afraid. Now I'm not afraid anymore. But I feel great gratitude and a great obligation to serve and to improve myself. That's the attitude of a mature devotee. And then when one becomes perfect, he develops love of God. Ecstatic love. And then all the fear is gone. And even the predominance of gratitude is there. But the predominance of serving out of duty. Instead, one graduates to the highest level of serving out of spontaneous love. Now, we chant our 16 rounds a day because we promise to do it. And I don't want to be ungrateful to my spiritual master. I try to follow the regular program because I promised my spiritual master I would do it. But if I ever get to the stage of spontaneous loving service, I will want to chant 24 hours a day. I will not tolerate sleeping more than absolutely necessary. I won't be able to tolerate it. I won't be able to tolerate wasting 1 second of time not doing something that actually satisfies Krishna. That's spontaneous love. Then we don't have to be motivated by fear. But the demigods are not, most of them are not yet pure devotees, so they are still motivated by awe, reverence, and fear. Maybe not as much as this verse makes it seem to be. It's a poetic verse, as if the demigods were, you know, scared rabbits just running around out of terror. That's not that bad. But the element of fear is there for all conditioned souls. Next verse.
Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yogena yoginaha kshemaya paramulame pravishantya kuto bhayam. The yogis, equipped with transcendental knowledge and renunciation, and engaged in devotional service for their eternal benefit, take shelter of my lotus feet, and since I am the Lord, they are thus eligible to enter into the kingdom of God without fear. Here is the perfection. To be able to go back to Godhead and reclaim one's eternal life and one's intimate connection with Krishna and the other Vaishnavas, in which there is no fear, there is no envy, lust, and greed, there's no frustration and disappointment ever. And everything you have is permanent. Nothing will be taken away from you. Complete opposite of what we're used to in the material world. We're fantasizing that we can maintain a permanent situation, but it cannot be done. No one has ever lived forever. No one has kept his control over anything permanently. Every conqueror of the earth has been swept away in a few years. Every one of them. Kshemaya, for security, in order to keep what you have permanently, it's recommended simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. One should practice devotional service. That devotional service should be informed, it should be fortified by knowledge and renunciation. We shouldn't practice just sentimental, foolish devotional service. We should know what we're doing and why we're doing it. And we cannot expect to keep one foot stuck in the mud and one foot in the sky and actually get anywhere. We have to pull ourselves out of the mud. We have to practice appropriate renunciation and give up all material attachments step by step. So jnana and vairagya have to be engaged in the service, have to support our devotional service. Yoginaha. The devotees were called sadhus at first, and then it was clearly established that these sadhus are not impersonalists or just impostors. These are Vaishnavas. So now in the end, they're called yogis. That means that yoga means connection. In school you learn arithmetic. Addition is called yoga. 1 + 1 = 2. You connect two sums to make the total. You connect the soul with God. That is the ultimate yoga. There are different processes of yoga, including the Ashtanga yoga system taught by Patanjali. But the ultimate purpose of yoga is to develop one's connection to God in pure devotion. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatein antaratmana Shradhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mataha. The most connected. There's different degrees of connection. You can be just yukta, somehow connected.
Actually, every living entity is connected with Krishna. We all have our relationships with Krishna. But most persons in this world are Krishna unconscious. Krishna is thinking of them. Krishna is providing everything for their necessities, all their necessities of life. Where does the food they eat come from? Where does the air they breathe and the sunlight that they see by? It's all coming from Krishna. So he's reciprocating with them, but they're ignoring him, Krishna unconsciousness. But the connection is there. So everybody's a yogi. But there's just being blindly, ignorantly connected with Krishna. And then there are different degrees of learning how to realize your connection with the Supreme. Yoga tara and yukta tara and yukta tama, the most connected. Who's the most connected? Of all yogis, he who has faith and serves me, Krishna, out of love, I think he's the best yogi, the one who has the best connection with me. Faith is defined by Lord Chaitanya in the words recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita of Krishna Das Kaviraj. Shraddha shabdhi vishwas kohi sudrida nishchoy. Krishna karma koile sarva karya krito hoy. The word faith doesn't just mean blind belief. It doesn't mean that. It means a practical thing. Confidence. Vishwas. The man who you have confidence in is called Vishwas. At least in Bengali, it means personal secretary. It's Vishwas. That's the title. The man you trust, your secretary. So it means confidence in general. The definition that's being given is that faith, in the transcendental sense, means to have confidence that if I simply work for the pleasure of Krishna, then I will get everything I need and everything I want will be provided. I don't need to be concerned for anything but the pleasure of Krishna. That's faith. Shraddhavan bhajat. One who has such faith, confidence, that Krishna, if I give everything to Krishna, he'll take care of me. At least that. And bhajate yo mam. And I try to serve Krishna in love. Then I'm the best of devotees, the best of yogis. So that's why in this verse, the sadhus, the Vaishnavas, are being called yogis. And then the last verse of the chapter.
Etavan evalokesmin pumsam nikshayasodayaha tivrena bhakti yogena manomoyarpitam stiram. Therefore, persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord engage in the intensive practice of devotional service. That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. So with that, Kapila Dev's instructions don't end. This is just the first chapter. But here he's finishing his first summary of the principles of devotional service, and then he goes into individual chapters describing some of the details. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, the same words were spoken in the first canto by Suta Goswami. No, it's second canto, and it's spoken by Shukadev. Akamo Sarvakamo Va Moksha Kamo Udara Di Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. Everybody should do the same thing, should engage in intense practice of service to the Supreme Lord. It doesn't matter whether you're a perfected devotee who's given up all attachments or not, whether you have no material attachments, which means a pure devotee, or you may have all sorts of material attachments,
Or you may have the particular attachment, moksha kama, of wanting to gain deliverance from the cycle of birth and death for yourself. In any of those three cases, if you're smart, if you have broad intelligence, udarati, you should understand the best thing for your own self-interest, whether it's selfish or selfless interest, is to vigorously practice the service of the Supreme Lord. This verse emphasizes that it's the pure devotees who can actually do it. The recommendation is given, everybody should try. But who can actually be successful in serving Krishna with all enthusiasm? How can a materialist actually have full enthusiasm to serve Krishna? Only in rare cases. We have the case of Dhruva Maharaj, who started off with strong material motives. He wanted, all he was thinking of, I've been insulted by my stepmother, my father doesn't recognize me, and let me sit on his lap because he's controlled by his other wife. I want revenge. I want to have a kingdom better than my father, better than my grandfather, better than Lord Brahma even, my great-grandfather. And he went to the forest, advised by his mother that Narayan is the person who can give you what you want. Well, where do I find Narayan? And she told him, the forest. And he found the Madhuvan forest. It's located just a little south, about 2 kilometers southeast of the Mathura Junction train station, Madhuvan forest. And that's where Dhruva Maharaj, starting with completely material motives, engaged very enthusiastically in devotional service and became pure and got the full mercy of Lord Narayan. Tivena Bhakti Yogina. But it's not usual that a materialist can summon up so much enthusiasm to serve Narayan. Because Dhruva wasn't really a materialist. It was a special circumstance. So the recommendation is there, but usually you can only expect that the pure devotees are going to have that much enthusiasm to serve the Supreme Lord. So what we have to do is try to make people into pure devotees. We have to become pure devotees. We have to make others pure devotees. That's our only hope. That no matter, even if we think that I'd like to stay in this world some more, I'm not ready to go back to Godhead quite yet, still, you should be enthusiastic about devotional service. It's the only way to be successful on any level. So this is Lord Kapila's introduction to his advice to his mother. And although he began the first few verses talking in general terms about self-realization, he very soon let the topic develop to the level of the necessity to dedicate your life completely to the service of the Supreme Lord. This is the actual message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the message of the Bhagavad Gita. Sarva Vedanta Sadam Hi Sri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadra Samrita Triptasya Nanyatra Syat Vati Kvachit. Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of Vedanta philosophy. It's teaching us what our relationship with God is, how to practically realize that relationship, and what perfection can be achieved when we do that. So it is the best presentation of Vedanta philosophy. And someone who gets a taste for hearing and studying and understanding and preaching Srimad Bhagavatam, there's no reason why he should be interested in any other literature. Even the other Puranas, even the Vedas and Upanishads. We can study these books, but they're not of the same prime importance to our own life as Srimad Bhagavatam. Just like you have your own family, you have a special responsibility to your family, to your wife and children. You may have some contact with other men's wives and children, but you don't have the same kind of relationship that you have with your own family. That's not normal.
Similarly, our relationship, like the child's relationship was with his father, his mother, our father and mother is Srimad Bhagavatam. Our spiritual life is coming. Srimad Bhagavatam has given us our life. So our primary relationship, in contrast with all of the Shastras, is with Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Tadvat samrita triptasya, if we've actually tasted the nectar and the enlightenment gained from the Bhagavatam, what interest should we have in other Shastras? Only if it can help in our understanding and our preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam do we consult other books. Otherwise, we're not interested. And the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna and the service of Krishna and the devotees of Krishna. Okay, so that's it for now. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Rana.
If one has given up everything, then what will Krishna take care of if he has given up everything?
Well, it's not, usually it's not literal. We give up, a devotee is called akinchana. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's completely penniless and he's walking around naked and doesn't eat, you know, and has no family, no friends, no occupation. Akinchana means that you don't consider anything your property. Yudhisthira was akinchana. But he was a king of a vast empire, and he had a big family and a lot of money and power. But he was a kinchana. So we give everything up, and Krishna gives it back to us. Or he gives us things to use in his service. And we say, we think, that it's not mine, it's Krishna's, I'm just utilizing it for Krishna's service. So with that attitude, we're living in this world, and we have various things that Krishna's given us. So Krishna has to maintain us. Krishna has to maintain the things for us that we're using in his service. Okay? Yes, Mother?
You were mentioning about the demigods and their pious activities. Isn't the pious activities on the Vaidhi Bhakti platform the same? Since actually in Indra's court, every day Ramadev comes as Upendra.
Yes. Okay, well, there's actually two questions there. In general, the demigods, with some exceptions, are engaging in sakkama bhakta. And that's karma mishra bhakti. Because they have material desires. They want their position, they want their power. Therefore, it's not pure devotional service. But you can't get God as your brother just by mixed devotional service. So Indra has a special relationship with Vamanadeva. There's actual love there. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been born as his brother, his youngest brother. But the relationship is not absolutely pure. Therefore, Indra gets into trouble. It's natural pitfall of a sibling relationship. The elder brother cannot take the younger brother with completely seriously. No matter how old and successful in life the youngest brother becomes, the older brother always just thinks of him as the little boy. So Indra, like that, when Krishna appeared on the earth and he was asked by Satyabhama to bring the Parijata flower, he went to Indra and requested, "Can you give it to me? You know who I am. Can I take this flower?" But Indra was thinking, this is my youngest brother. What is he doing? And he told Indra, Krishna, right to his face, "I think you're too much controlled by your wives. You should really get, control over the situation. Don't you understand this flower is not allowed to leave heaven, that it's not supposed to be on the earth? If I give it to you, that'll be against the law of Lord Brahma, who has ordained that this flower can only grow in heavenly planets." So he refused Krishna. And then Krishna had to fight and defeat Indra. So there's the sort of fault in the relationship, is that Indra can't take Krishna completely seriously. And then later on, he committed the serious apparat of trying to destroy Vrindavan with his reign, because he couldn't take Krishna completely seriously. So it's still mixed devotion. Somehow he got Krishna as his brother. There's intense devotion there, but it's not completely pure. Those are the pitfalls of being a demigod. We shouldn't want to take birth as demigods. It makes it difficult to perform devotional service, to be in the position of a demigod. You become complacent, you become proud, and it's hard to avoid that. Better to take birth on the earth, live a simple life, a short life, and go back to Godhead. To take birth as a demigod is a sentence. You have to remain in this material world for millions of years to live out your life as a demigod. Better take birth as a human being and be done with it in less than 100 years. Anything else? Yes, Prabhu? Yes. Yes. That is an obvious example, but there are also other disciples who didn't do that, and they're also a Kinshana. You know, you can keep your paycheck, and maybe you can't even get 50% of it. But you give in another way, give everything you have to Krishna. You know, you may keep the money in your own bank account, but you use every penny of it for Krishna's service. So, you know, we can't judge just by the external thing. That someone who's penniless is a Kinshana, and someone who has money in the bank must be a materialist. The counterexample of Gadadhar Pandit, yes, wanted to take initiation. He was, I think, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or Swarup Damodar. Swarup Damodar told him, I think you should take initiation from Pundarik Vidyanadi, great devotee, and now he's come to Navadvip. You should meet him. Gadadhar Pandit went to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, but Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a very rich man. And he went to his house and saw him sitting there in his fancy apartment, silk cloth on the bed, and he had his, oil in his hair, nicely combed, wearing fancy silk clothes, perfumed. And he said, this is just a Vishnu, materialist. I'm supposed to accept him as guru? And he was thinking like that. He didn't say anything. That he was a little shy. He didn't know whether he wanted to actually talk to him or not. And then someone in the room recited one verse from the Bhagavatam. I think about Putana getting Krishna's mercy. Pundarik Vidyanidhi immediately fell into a swoon of ecstasy. Started rolling around on the floor and breaking all the furniture in the room. Tearing the cloth off the bed and just showing signs of ecstasy. Then Gadadhar Pandit realized, that he made a serious apparat in his mind to think that this great devotee was a materialist. He shouldn't have judged by the external signs. Just because he's rich and looks like a materialist from the outside, not necessarily true. He was a Kinshana. Okay? Pundarik Vidyanidhi is the father of Radharani, Vrishabhanu Maharaj. So he's the father of the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. Why shouldn't he be rich? Okay. Any other questions? Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.